time for a Sales Manager Spotlight, brought to you by Death Wish Coffee, the world's strongest coffee. And we're going to be talking to some of the world's strongest and smartest sales managers.
What they like, what they fear, how they hire. Doesn't matter if you're a manager, doesn't matter if you're a salesperson, it doesn't even matter if you're just a person. You're going to learn something from these top leaders from around the country.
And with that, it's time to get this week's Sales Manager Spotlight. Let's go to the boss's office. I promise, this time, it won't be scary.
On the line now is Lee Novak. He is the Vice President of Sales for Etcetera's in Texas. It is a membership-based discount service company. They optimize business performance and empower employees. You can learn more about Lee's company at www.etcetera's.com.
Well, you know, I grew up on a farm in South Texas. That is actually where I grew up. Went to a small 1A school. We had 18 on the football team. We had 58 in our graduating class.
Wow.
Wow.
I know what you're thinking. That was 3,000 years ago, and we were using abacus, but it was still a great school.
And did you have girls on the football team? How did you get 18 guys?
I was going to ask if there were paved roads.
But 1 year, we probably could have done better because we were 0-10 1 year. So we probably would have done better if we would have just fielded girls.
Gotcha.
But it was all guys.
That's interesting. That's totally interesting. And
oh, man.
Did you go to college?
I did. Went a couple of years to a junior college and ran out of money. Had to start making some. Got into the field of sales and been on this path ever since.
Way to go.
I know the feeling. I'm in the same boat as you. It wasn't that I ran out of money because my parents paid for my college education, but I was running out of personal money. My dad gave me $20 a week allowance and I was making a couple hundred bucks a week doing other stuff. And I wasn't making enough money in college. So I quit.
Well, I think you've done pretty well for yourself, so I think that was a good choice.
So far it's going okay.
So you quit college and what did you start selling?
My first real sales job was with a company called Alamo Ironworks, and it was in the industrial distribution business. And I had a territory in southern Texas. We sold about 40,000 different items, everything from nuts and bolts to structural steel to Black & Decker type of tools. And my customer base was everything from Joe Smith's welding shop to large municipalities. So it was a broad range. That was my first sales job in the 80s.
Did you have fun doing it?
Oh, I did. And I knew that this was something, that this field of sales was something that it didn't matter if I had a degree or I didn't. It didn't matter if I was the smartest guy in the room. What mattered is... if I did a good job, I was compensated for it. And I remember one time an old sales manager told me, "You know, the great thing about sales is anytime you want to raise, you can get one.
Yeah, exactly.
All you gotta do is sell more."
That's right. Oh, that's right.
That's a classic quote. How was your manager in your first gig?
My first manager was excellent in that gig. And I give him a lot of credit for giving me that foundation of treating customers well and the value of the customers. And I also took from that the value of the people aspect. He treated me like a human being and didn't have, you know, he cared about me as a person, the family I was raising. And that made me want to work harder for him. Which I did. Subsequently, I had other managers that weren't quite as strong. But I always remember the gifts that I learned from him in terms of that training.
When you say weren't quite as strong, was that a Texas way of saying they were shitty?
Yes, that would be an excellent quote. But you know, it's interesting, and I often tell my salespeople this, that the best thing that happened to me was having a great manager. And the second best thing was having a terrible manager, because a terrible manager made me realize if I'm going to swim across this lake, I've got to figure out how to do it on my own.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I can't rely on that particular individual. And so I gained a lot by having bad managers as well as having a great manager.
Cool.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
So how did you make the transition from salesperson to sales manager?
I was just going to ask that.
I recognized that the company that I was at, as much fun as I was having, it was my first step into sales. I knew where I was from a production standpoint, being the number two or three guy in the company, and recognizing that my manager at the time, knowing what that person made, I realized if I'm going to move up in a company, I want to be able to move up in a company where I could make a better living for my future family. And that ultimately caused me to look at a company called ADP. And why they hired me, I don't know. But because I had no experience in technology, I had no experience in automotive dealerships, which is what they served. But what I did have was I had a reputation of being able to take care of existing customers very well. We didn't lose very many of those customers when I was at Alamo. And ultimately, that was what the job was for. It was for an account manager. And after about a year, I was promoted to what they called a territory manager position, which had a mix of existing customers and competitive prospects. And after having a tremendous success there, for example, we never lost an existing customer in 8.5 years.
Cool. Wow.
I had somebody
that
saw something
in
me.
That's a huge
track record.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a credit to the team that I worked with. It was a credit to the company and the products that we had. It wasn't all me. But at the same time, somebody saw that as a real plus. And they saw things in me that I personally didn't even see in myself. And they called me one night and said, we'd like for you to apply for this manager position. And I did, based on that person's recommendation. And then I've been in management ever since.
Cool. And so... but is ADP your present customer, your present employer? You're just in a branch of that right now, or do you have your own? Is Etcetera's?
No. Etcetera's is a totally different company. I left ADP after 21 years.
Whoa.
ADP Dealer Services is now known as CDK Global, that division.
Mm-hmm.
But I left ADP after 21 years. I did consulting for a couple of years with a very good friend of mine. And that's how I came across Etcetera's. They were a client of ours through the consulting group. They were looking to do something new and different in a market that had existed for a long time. And so that's how I ended up here at Etcetera's.
We use ADP, right, for payroll?
Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
So you mentioned before that you learned a lot from your good managers, but you learned equally as much from your bad managers about what not to do and how to survive as a salesperson. What kind of techniques have you taken from what you've learned and that you're using now in your sales leadership style?
I think probably the biggest thing is just the value of people. And I think sometimes we can get really lost in tactical approaches, which is very important. But the people aspect, people being the employees that you have on your team, regardless of experience, and then the people also being your customer and your prospects. And if you're able to really focus on those key areas, but the heartbeat of that is people, then the money comes and the success comes and the achievement comes. That sounds very simplistic, but it has worked for me. That doesn't mean that we don't have the need for training and we need to have tactical approaches, but you can get a lot more out of people if you value them as a person first and how much they sell for you second.
How much time do you spend on a percentage basis between product training and soft skills training, sales training?
Well, we have soft skills training. Let me put it in percentages. I would say about 70% of our training is on soft skills, how to interact, how to position things, how to overcome an obstacle, an objection, a setback. And the other percentage is based upon product, how that product works, how that product can make an impact on your customer. I would say that's probably the percentage that we're at this point.
I'm going to just throw something at you. I for years, have dealt with outcome rather than sale. I want to know what's going to happen after the customer takes possession, after they've made the purchase. And it seems like in your business, that's an integral part of the play. Like what, you know, they're going to they're going to pay a fee every month, and you're going to give them people, and you're going to use your wealth of resources to them. But really, the bottom line is what happens the first day they start to use the product, correct?
Right, that's correct.
And you have some testimonials on your website. We kind of we've researched you, and I just no, we wouldn't have gone through with this if you didn't pass. I'm going to tell you that right now. You seem to have your act together with respect to a product that not many other people can compete with. Mm-hmm. Do you have a lot of competition?
No, we often say as humbly as we can, because we don't want to come across like circus criers, but the reality is we're the only company in America that offers this in the way that it's offered. There are comparisons to a Costco. There are comparisons to, if you're an AARP member, you can get similar discounts. The difference is this is based upon a company, that would be one column, and the employees. So if you're a member with us, all of your employees qualify for the perks that we provide. So today we're the only company in America, but honestly, you guys have been around a while too, that we know that that's short term. Somewhere someone's going to say, hey, that's a great idea. Let's jump on that bandwagon. Mm-hmm. Today we don't have that, but our biggest competition, frankly, is educating the market, letting the customer, answering that question that we know the customers or prospects asking, which is, this sounds too good to be true. And that's probably our biggest competition, is just awareness.
I have to say, circus criers notwithstanding, we just saw the movie The Greatest Showman. P.T. Barnum did pretty good as a circus crier. So you don't want to discount
those
guys.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
No disrespect to the circus people at all.
Yeah. There's an elephant in the room. Oh, wait, it's a circus elephant.
Oh, man.
People in Charlotte, North Carolina, or the surrounding 1,000-mile radius, I need your help. I'm going to be doing two public seminars here in Charlotte. June the 14th, a leadership seminar, a sales leadership seminar. And June the 15th, a public sales mastery seminar. And you're invited. All you have to do is buy a ticket and show up. I'm going to be talking about things that will take you through this year and the next decade, and what you have to do to maintain your leadership position, set the standard, and make the money that you're hoping to earn. Go to cgittimer.com, cgittimer.com/Charlotte.
Hashtag Gittimer is back.
It's going to be a hootenanny.
Hashtag Gittimer is hootenanny.
Hashtag I'm going to rock your sales world.
So it's interesting, you're in the business of valuing other people's people.
Yeah.
Because you place such a high value on people as a secret to your success. So talk to us about your people and how do you hire? What do you look for when you're hiring?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I would say this, that hiring to me is from an executive or a manager standpoint on the sales side. In my view, that is the most important thing that you do. Because if you hire the right people, and you empower them, and you make sure that they're trained along the way, that will almost certainly always ensure the success and the achievements that you and the company are trying to get to. But what I look for is I look for individuals, one thing, how do they treat people? For example, part of the interview process is I will have a meeting with that candidate at a restaurant. And when I'm sitting there, I generally get there early. And as they come in, I'm able to absorb, how did they treat the greeter at the front of the restaurant? How did they interact with the waiter or waitress? Did they just ignore them because they thought I was more important? Or how did they treat those people that are, quote, invisible? Because how they react in that situation is going to also mirror how they reacted to the receptionist, how they reacted to a person that maybe doesn't have authority but has a lot of influence.
The gatekeeper.
You know, I look at how they treat.
At Alaska Airlines, they interview people, and then they watch what they do in between the interviews, and that determines what whether they're going to hire them or not.
Yeah, they put them in one of those rooms where you can see in, right? But they can't see out. Yeah. I love that.
Oh, there's an idea. I may have to try that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to ask one question.
Go for it, Jeff.
When you train your sales guy, and we're, I hate to tell you this, but we're in the training business. When you train your salespeople, do you train them for an opening question or and some kind of opening dialogue that begins the sales conversation?
I do. I do. And the reason I hesitate a little bit, because really what I teach them is they've got to listen more than they talk.
Mm-hmm.
But listening can also be asking the right question.
Mm-hmm.
So oftentimes we will raise a problem that we know that most private businesses have, i.e., do you have a problem like many of our other private business members that at night you're awake because you're concerned you're going to lose some of your best people to those large companies? And almost always they will say yes. Sometimes, though, they know they feel like we're trying to sell them early and they might give us a different answer. But it's really about training them to ask the right questions,
mm-hmm.
and also having the right presence when they walk to that gatekeeper or the people before the actual decision maker.
Right. If they feel like they're being sold, it's because the salesperson hasn't created a calming environment. You know what I mean? The customer's
right.
still
We're
on guard.
Building enough relationship.
Like, what are you trying to sell me?
Right.
Like when someone says, "How are you today?"
Right.
I go, "What are you selling?"
Yes.
I guard my bag.
I'm always right.
Right.
So I'm curious. I'm curious to know because we'll have to have a conversation offline. But I've thought of a question that your guys should ask that I think would be killer and would.
Okay.
And it doesn't beat around. I'm not a beat around the bush person. I'm a New York salesperson. And I have found that when you ask something direct of somebody, they are impressed for the fact that you've hit the nail on the head.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you have to be careful when you ask the question.
Yeah.
But I usually will warm the person up personally and then jump into a question. I'll try to make a segue and then jump into a serious engagement question or a qualifying question.
Yeah, it's a technique you learned in New York, but it really works everywhere.
Yeah.
What's that
like? I would love to know more about that. I mean, I think that what you just said is really key, and that is being able to remember what your objective is as that salesperson. Your objective ultimately is you want to develop a relationship as quickly as possible to gain trust and to earn the right to make that pitch. But there are different ways to do that very directly.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to take 30 minutes to ask that question.
Right.
Are your guys all in one area or do they spread out around the country?
Currently today, we have them all working out of our Houston, Sugarland, Texas office. And eventually they will be more remote. But we have all of them here today.
So it's a phone sale as much as it is anything else?
We have only a couple of folks that are focused on phone sales. And they really support the outside director of membership positions. There are a number of co-calling. We obviously provide them leads. There's referrals coming from existing members that keeps them pretty busy at this point.
Do you have to go to Dallas to get barbecue? I'm just kidding.
No, you know, the great thing about Texas is we have good barbecue here in Houston, but Dallas has it as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I want you to think about your top two or three salespeople. What are they doing differently that's making them winners?
I think what they're doing differently, and I thought about this in terms of year-over-year growth, right? What are the really great salespeople and good producers doing different this year than they did last year? And I think the biggest thing is that they are looking at it from the customer's perspective better. And they're going what I would call a deeper dive. Well, maybe last year they were just asking superficial sort of questions like, how's business? You know, what are some of the things you plan on doing? And now they're getting a little deeper under that sales hood, if you will, where they're saying, what are the three business objectives that you got over the next, 12 to 24 months? They're mm-hmm. both short term, medium, and also long term. They're asking them questions like, you know, what is your retention? What is your biggest fears in terms of what employee do you think you could not do without? Those kinds of things. So I think the great salespeople have transitioned from asking the superficial questions to getting deeper. And with each depth that they go further down to, they develop a deeper relationship over the course of time.
I know that, and I'm just going to throw something back at you. When a salesperson talks to me and they start to ask me questions that fall into the general range of none of your business, I tend to push back a little bit.
Yeah, but that's because you're considering them a salesperson. Lee's people have to get to become trusted, friendly with the potential.
Yeah, and it's easier in Texas
first
than it is in New York City.
Oh, for sure.
You know, there's a howdy factor that y'all have well, howdy, and how's your mama and them? And then there's a warmer welcome there once you get out of the traffic.
And I also think, yeah, I agree. And I think, too, that versus, you know, maybe New York, you have to get to the point much quicker.
No, you have to get to the point damn fit. Yeah, you got 5 seconds.
Yeah, well, that's a lot.
Yeah. So are you going to go to Austin and then, like, San Antonio and then Dallas, or are you going to just go nationwide?
Yeah, we'll go nationwide. I mean, obviously, we have looked at New York, the Boston area. In fact, the founder of our company is from Boston. He's almost to the point now where he can say his R's instead of saying ca. It's a ca.
Cool.
But he's getting in there.
If you're going to go and brag about this interview, tell him I'm an Eagles fan.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, boy.
He can hate me right away. Yeah, tell him he can hate me, but I can double his sales.
He'll love that.
Exactly.
He'll love that more.
Yeah, all of a sudden he'll change sweatshirts.
That's funny. So is there anything else our diehards should know about your secret to sales success?
Before I address that, I wanted to come back to something that Jeffrey said.
Sure.
If I could.
Sure.
He mentioned about how do you get, you know, there's this none of your business sort of attitude, right? And one of the things that has helped us, and it's something that I learned years ago, is I try to give kind of a commitment to the prospect or the customer that goes something like this, where I will say, listen, we don't know each other very well, but I want to make a commitment to you today. And that commitment is I will not, and my people will not, sell you a product or service that doesn't either help you to make more money, help you to save money, improve your processes, or help that brand on your shingle outside of your organization. And I want you to hold me accountable. If we're ever doing that, I want you to hold me accountable and say, you didn't honor your commitment. And generally when I do that, and my people do that, generally it opens the door to allow them to ask some of those questions. But to Jeffrey's point, there are still people that will say, I don't know why you're asking me that.
Right.
And so when that happens, we teach our people to back off and say, you know what? It's obvious I haven't earned the right, and I promise I'll work hard to do that.
Cool.
Well, hold on. They haven't earned the right. If someone says back off, that's not a problem. That's a symptom.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is they haven't set the question up properly. They haven't put the customer at ease enough to be able to feel comfortable enough to answer the question.
Right.
Or maybe they phrased the question in a way that's just too damn nosy because they're trying to make a sale
right
rather than build a relationship. And there's a big difference.
Right.
And when you have a membership, when you have a membership program, it's all about the relationship.
Right.
Because the last thing you want is somebody to call up and go, you know, I think we're going to cancel.
Right.
That's a horrible phone call to get.
Yes, it is.
Because it's that customer's money times 10 years. You know, maybe they're canceling $100 a month, but really the reality is it's like a $15,000 loss.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and it's also so much more expensive to add a new customer than to take care of the existing
one. It's
ones.
A pain in the ass. I have a quote from my customer loyalty book. It's more than 20 years old. It never costs as much to fix the problem as it does to not fix the problem. And,
you know,
you're in a situation where you're offering all kinds of cool stuff. Aren't you?
Yes.
I like your strategy of
so do I.
offering that commitment up front. It would be cool if they have it like on a laminated sheet of paper or something, and they take a Sharpie and sign it right there in front of the customer and give it to them.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a great idea. Thank you.
You're welcome.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, no problem. Where do we send that invoice?
We're here for ideas on Sell or Die.
Send the invoice. If you're a sales leader and you just heard this segment and you're thinking, man, I really should get that Gittimer Learning Academy, stop. You need to get the Learning Academy for your entire team so they can get better. And you can track, measure, and monitor everybody on your team after they've taken the assessment and learn about how good they are and or where they need help. And you as their leader can now actually coach them to victory.
If you're a strong, smart, successful sales manager and you want to be featured in our Sales Manager Spotlight series on Sell or Die, all you need to do is email sellordie@gittimer.com. If you know someone or you have a favorite sales manager who's amazing and should be featured, nominate them at sellordie@gittimer.com. Until next time, I'm Jen Gluckow.
And I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, reminding you to get out there and sell something, even if your ass falls off. Sell or Diehards, attention. If you love the show, make sure you have subscribed to the show.
And if you've subscribed, make sure you rate us on iTunes and give us a star on Overcast.
And if you've done all of that, tell a friend. Tell both your friends about the best sales podcast on the planet.
And if you've done all of that, well, you're a true seller diehard, and we thank you.
Thank you.
Merci beaucoup.